Welcome to the Transformational Wealth Podcast with Mark Henn. Mark is devoted to helping you understand how the wealthy invest and explaining how to leverage investment strategies to make the most of your financial situation. In each episode, Mark breaks down key financial strategies and provides direct action steps so you can expand your financial toolkit and change the trajectory of your financial life. He also sits down with individuals who are actively using these wealth-building power plays, giving you real-world insights into how these strategies work in action. Are you ready? Let's jump in and start building your financial future today.
Welcome to this episode of the Transformational Wealth Podcast. I'm Mark Henn, CEO of Harvest Financial Advisors, and I'm joined today by Fred Gratz, Director of Business Development for the Atlantic Region for U.S. Energy Development Corporation. And I'm so looking forward to this. Welcome, Fred. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so in my book, we're going to talk about energy, but specifically oil and gas. Yeah. And in my book, Power Plays of the Wealth, we talk about the five different super asset classes. One of those is energy, specifically oil and gas. We go through talking about some topics, but I want to spend a little time just walking through that with some of the listeners as well, some of the readers, and just what that really means to them and the benefits, the risks, things like that. So just, if you don't mind jumping in, I know we've known each other for some years now, but tell us a little about yourself, how you got into working with U.S. Energy Development, even in the oil and gas side, and what you like about it so much.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I've been this firm for about 11 going on 12 years now.
Okay.
I've been in the space, right, the business for closer to, I guess, a quarter century. Now that I think about it, it's weird to actually say those words for the first time, thinking back to 2000. You know, from larger money managers like Goldman Sachs, it worked out of the Chicago office for a number of years, to smaller, more specialized firms. My journey here is a little different, right? So a little unique in that one of our, I guess, pioneers, our leaders, U.S. Energy, and now one of the owners of the firm, I've known him for 30-something years.
Oh, wow.
And okay. So 10 years ago, when he called me to sit down, kind of outlined his vision for the firm, it was interesting for me. But the chance, I guess, for me to partner with a firm that was really disrupting the space, right? We've done a lot in the space, from innovating very unique product design to getting a lot of market share just through unique value prop. For me to do that with someone that was leading the charge and someone that I've known and trusted for decades, that was an easy choice.
Sure. Yeah. Nice. So you've kind of been around this area, what I hear you saying, for a long time. And then, of course, again, with the last 10, 11, 12 years, whatever, with U.S. Energy Development as well, correct?
Exactly.
Nice. Yeah. So let's jump in a little bit here. When we talk about, in the book, I talk a lot about producers versus consumers. And again, being a producer is really the U.S. government incentivizing the private market to provide those things that the government knows that it needs to provide for the constituent, its constituents, it's the public, whatever. Some of those are supporting businesses so they can create jobs, supporting real estate so people have places to live, right? Yeah. And then one of those is energy. Obviously, energy is very important, drives a lot of things in our lives. Pretty much everything we look at, we need energy that we use now. We need energy for that, and oil and gas is no exception for one of those areas where the government provides those incentives to the private sector to generate energy for its population as well. So let's talk a little bit about that. What should investors know about getting started in oil and gas, or just that the industry in general?
Yeah, I think you kind of said it, right? But there's typically, if I'm going to talk, say, if we're going to have a conversation, say, on just economics and investing, and then if we're separately going to have a conversation on, say, tax planning, right? What can you do to lower your taxes? Usually that's mutually exclusive, right? You kind of have to have, one or the other. Oil and gas is unique and you can combine them, right? There's many parts of the tax. And the reason is that in terms of our sector in the tax code, the tax law, there, think of a Venn diagram, there's a massive amount of overlap, right? So,
right.
And this goes back well over a century. It's not like this just came out. And so what's interesting in our kind of, I guess, specialty here is just having a very, very deep understanding of both sides of that, right? The oil and gas sector as an operator for 50 years in the space, and then also on the tax code and trying to bring those two together, which unlocks right. some really fun, I guess, tax planning discussion for advisors and tax planning maneuvers for their clients.
Well, and I guess there's a lot of ways to go about that. There are, you know, and you can probably add more to this, to my list, but there's drilling programs. There right. are mineral rights investments. There's now, you know, we've had for some years now opportunity zones.
So many ways, yeah.
There's ways to invest in IRAs, but maybe with a different class or unit of ownership as well and benefits there. Talk yeah. a little bit about some of the tax incentives that come along with. Let's start with a drilling program, let's say, as a general partner. Just what are some of the tax incentives there that an investor may find there?
Yeah, and these can be these can vary markedly from, say, firm to firm, sponsor to sponsor.
Sure.
What we'll try to do, and what most of our sector does, they offer these drilling funds out of these upfront tax deductions, right? So drilling funds are there for really one reason only. And especially the higher the bracket you are, right? The higher income you are, the more useful they can be, right?
Okay.
Because it's no secret, right? That the top 1% of earners pay like 52% of all tax,
right?
And that's been that way for quite some time. So those are the guys that need the relief, or at least some kind of investment and / tax planning encompassed in one. And that's historically what they'll be able to provide is this upfront write-off. And some companies, what does that mean in client or in tax right. terms? It for some companies, it means they'll have if they put a dollar into a drilling fund, they'll get a deduction of 20, 30, 60 cents. And then you'll have the other end of the curve, which is where we specialize in, where you can write off anywhere between 85 and 90% wow. of every dollar invested. And the fun part is they're above the line deductions. They work with AMT, so it doesn't screw up the other planning, and it okay. nets them the most. So it kind of follows that saying, right? It's not so much what you make, but what you keep.
You can keep, yeah. So in the drilling programs, general partner, you would be, right. and what I hear you saying is that there are some each company you may look at or you may go with to do your investment with. Obviously, you can do it yourself if you want to, but if you're using an organization to assist you, they may structure it differently. The same deductions may be there, just the amount may differ as well based upon when things get into production and so forth, correct?
Yeah, and that's why this is where you get to a fork in the road when you're looking at these, right? The investor
right.
experience from firm to firm can vary wildly. Right. From
right.
and that's why it's important for we're with your role in this, right? You're doing due diligence on all the
sure.
different structures that are out there. You're looking at the company's history, not just of performance, right? The money that they're making, but also their history of ensuring their deduction, right? Their balance
right.
sheet, their deal structure, and just providing the most investor centric experience as possible. And that's, you know, for us, and one of the reasons that we've seen so much success and growth in the past 10 plus years is because we've been able to offer really what we think the investors are looking for the most, which is highest
right.
possible tax benefits, most predictable economics and cash flows on the way out. And that's really what we try to marry up.
And I know you all put out tax information even to help investors and even accountants sure. as well to do the taxes. Also, in my book, a little bit, we talk about how do you get those write-offs, right? There's the intangible drilling costs, the IDCs and things like that. And we won't spend a lot of time going into that today, but that's where that comes about. Sounds like you all recognize structuring the investment where you get to write off a lot of that upfront, and that comes right off someone's ordinary income to reduce yeah. their taxes in that year that you make the investment, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's part of the tax code 263-C as in Charlie. It's over a century. The cool thing is we have all of this in a tax handbook for the CPAs out there. So nice. These are, you know, our discussion is not our interpretation of the tax code. It's not a private letter ruling. It's literally the tax law, and we outline
right.
it. But that's exactly it. Yeah.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing that up. But one of the things I have talked about is that, you know, the IRS, you know, tax code may be this thick, and this much of it is the taxes you have to pay. This much of it is how to reduce or, you know, avoid whatever term you want to use, not illegally, but legally, how to not pay taxes. Okay. And if you spend the time focusing on these areas, you can help reduce your taxes. But I will guarantee you, if you don't spend your time on this, the IRS is happy to take all your money with this portion of the tax code as well. And so, as you pointed out, with a lot of high income earners, this can be a way to get a full investment into an asset class, but get big tax write-offs at the beginning as well, to impact or help out someone's tax situation. You keep more of your assets then, and then you can take those to invest elsewhere.
Yeah.
In addition to that, you now are investing, you're being a producer, right? You're investing into something that the country needs. You're providing value to others as well. So it's not about just how does an investor get wealthy or avoid taxes. Those are some of the benefits that come along with creating value for others as well, which is what I love about a lot of these super asset classes, including oil and gas, is that you get to provide value to others too, providing that energy as well.
Exactly. And even beyond just the scope of investing a dollar to reduce ordinary income, which is fantastic, but we do a lot on the qualified side, right? People that want to convert IRAs to Roth IRAs, but it's always tax tail investment dog, right? They don't want to pay more tax. Well, what if we can show you how to do it tax free, right? There's mechanisms for this. And even beyond, right, just beyond just the maneuvers and the tax savings, one of the things historically, oil and gas energy has been, in terms of, say, the correlation to the main markets, namely the S&P, mm-hmm. it's the flattest of almost anything. It's like 0.03, 0.02. It's very, very flat, meaning it helps add ballast to a portfolio as well as very, very heavy cash flows, which can be very useful things in choppy markets that we're seeing right now.
Sure. Well, and one of the things, you know, you mentioned the IRA as well. There are strategies there too, where, as you said, you can invest into IRAs, look at, because of those same intangible drilling costs, the value of that investment drops. And then potentially you can do a conversion the second year into a Roth IRA for a lot less in value, correct? There's that strategy out there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's one of the benefits, I guess, if you're utilizing these correctly in our spaces, we are, and it's not like we're trying to disguise a dollar and reduce that value for a tax maneuver. It's the tax law. We are required to discount all of our assets. And those can be substantial, right? So historically, we have told investors your dollar will probably be about 50 cents and sometimes way less of a revalue, which means if you're going to do a conversion, half your tax bill is also out the window as well or more.
Right.
So that can be a lot of fun.
And I think that's a unique or a distinction that has to be made, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, when I think about other assets, I can go out and look at, oh, what's my paper asset portfolio worth, my stocks and bonds? What's my real estate worth? You know, what are my, if I have gold and silver commodities, what is that worth? What's the value of my business? Things like that. In oil and gas, if you were to go out in year two and say, what's my investment worth? You'd see it's worth a lot less. And you're thinking, like, why did I do this? But in oil and gas, especially in that drilling program, what we're talking about, it's about the tax write-offs, and then it's about the future cash flow that you're looking for, correct?
Exactly. By design. Yeah. Now, and that's the cool thing about the oil and gas space. There are so many different structures, right? Tax return profiles and different economic experiences as well. And that allows the investor to kind of have this a la carte menu, right? If they're looking for total return, right, growth and income, we've got a bucket for that. It's not this. If you have a cap gain issue, not income, we have an op zone, which can be a fantastic vehicle, or not, maybe not even just our firm, but the space itself has evolved so much in the last decade or so, as now investors just have just so much more of optionality in kind of picking their tax maneuver, picking their economic experience, deal structure, et cetera.
Yeah. And you mentioned op zone, opportunity zone fund. I want to get to that in a second, but We've talked about all the great things about our drilling program. Let's step back and talk about the risks involved. How they can be mitigated with any investment. Obviously, there's risks, right? So yeah. That's part of it. So what are the risks an investor faces within the oil and gas world, especially inside a drilling fund?
And kind of like that earlier comment, right, where this is one of those points where an investor experience can kind of vary quite a bit. And some of that is going to be on from what we do, right, to say such a very much a smaller operator with a different niche, right? So from that perspective, and I'll just, from our perspective, our capital base, they want us to basically manufacture cash flow for them, right? Prices are up, prices are sideways, prices are down. They want consistency. And that's why we operate in kind of core areas, right? We don't have these, what we call exploratory or wildcatting style assets. We're not looking to take a dollar and turn it into 10 or 50. That's somebody else's job, right? We want middle of the fairway. We want to be able to hedge production. Right. So especially right now, prices drop below 60. Our hedge is active.
Right.
So prices might be with a five handle. Our investors aren't seeing that because we hedged that risk out in the past.
Sure.
And so all of the and even from there, right, you want to have this broad diversified portfolio. Right. So if you don't have the scale, so us we'll do $1 billion this year. Right. We will literally do $1 billion of CapEx. And my nearest competitor will probably do $250 million. And not that it's bad, right? Some people love that very concentrated, high return profile. Our investors want to get rid of that idiosyncratic risk of just a singular asset, right? Having 5, 10, 15 wells in a portfolio. We want to have 150, 200 wells in a single portfolio. We want to hit a broad bell curve of return profiles, right? So that if you have those surprises, the shoulders of that bell curve, you still know that statistically everything's kind of in the middle doing what you'd expect. And not that, again, there's not one that's right or wrong. We just tend to be risk adverse. And for those that really love risk, there's other things out there that have a lot of potential upside. Now, there's a lot of downside ratio-wise, but really it's just there to give investors the experience that they're looking for.
So what I hear you saying is that obviously the price of oil can impact that. That's one of the risks that people face there. U.S. Energy hedges that somewhat because you're not looking for the big bang, like you said, some huge return. And some people may be wildcatting, things like that. What I'm going to surmise is that or assume is that you're typically looking at places you can go and connect and connect with other firms or maybe reworking old fields that you know or have additional resources down there that used to produce, and now with new technology, you may be able to get out the next 25% of the oil out of the ground. So you're looking at those types of investments. And then with that hedging, you know, you're looking for kind of that middle of the road return, not too aggressive, but you can protect on the downside so you can provide a more consistent cash flow. Is that kind of what I hear?
Yeah, exactly. What's that Goldilocks zone? So we look at it this way, right? You know, we kind of call it the three P's, right? If markets go up, investors want to participate in that growth. If markets go down, like right now, they want protection. They want to know that, hey, they put a dollar in, that dollar safe, right?
Right.
And then you have the sideways. If markets kind of do nothing, they want to persevere, right? And it's with that we want to be able to deliver those singles and doubles consistently. We don't care about the home run, right? You want to swing the bat and strike out a lot. There's someone out there for that. If they want to get on base every time, that's our game. And that's basically how we've kind of built our structure.
Right. Now, if I think I had oil on my land, I could go and hire some rigs to come out and try to drill and so forth. I could do that all on my own if I wanted to. If I'm not going to take the time to do that, I'm probably going to look for a reputable company I can utilize to assist with that. You kind of alluded to this a little bit. What are, how can investors ensure that they're working with a reputable company?
Yeah.
What are some things they should look for in that?
Beyond just performance, right? Don't, and I see this so much in the space because the laws have been lax the last 5 or 7 years. But don't tell me what you could do with this kind of a model, this many barrels. Show me a track record. Show me an audited track record of what you've done, not what you might do if and then, but you know, and that's, there's a big disconnect there. I see so many pieces where, hey, we've got a 5x right? That's all but guaranteed. I mean, that you're seeing that kind of stuff. You really got to run and see who's actually doing the reviews behind the scenes. Another part of that is, does the company have skin in the game, right? So for us, last year, we put almost $200 million of our own free cash flow in the same assets that our investors come into. The exact same things through every structure, our drilling funds, our opportunity zones, our 1031s, our total return, all the different verticals that we've got. We're big fans of that. Is the chef eating his own cooking? And if not, right, you got to ask some questions. And then also, where are they operating, right? So for what we've built, 90%+ of our portfolios are in basically the core of the core of the Permian. And we've actually done something a little different in the space. My peers will go out and they'll take two sides of the house and connect, right? So kind of the front side of the house is basically the capital formation, right? And then the back side is the inventory, right? Okay. So if they bought an asset for a dollar, it's easy to go out and raise, say, $1.20, right? Mark it up 20% and make a business there. We, not that we never did that decades back, but in the last decade or so, it's allowed us to partner with the biggest firms out there. So in other words, the majors like Oxy, Shell, Conoco, Exxon, Devon, Matador, these are the operators of our assets. It's not us.
Right.
Why? Because they have, but now we have 500,000-600,000 acres on our books. Why wouldn't we? It's a lot more creative to us to do what our competitors do, but these guys own all the best stuff, right? They have the best geologists, the best infrastructure, the lowest break-evens, takeaway capacity, you name it. Why wouldn't we go there? Right. And that's been a big part of kind of building that puzzle out is if you offer investors the leanest deal structure in the space, which we've done, right? The access to the best operators, which we've done, giving them some risk mitigation mechanisms like hedging and whatnot. So they've got some downside protection, then everything else will take care of itself. And so for us, it was allowed that design in history allowed us to basically have performance make the model work, not fees and markups to make the model work.
Gotcha. All right. So I appreciate you going into that as well, how the company has kind of evolved, reckoning, because that then really brings true value to hopefully the investors as well, and to US Energy also. I mean, and having those partnerships.
Yeah. We're not altruistic, but we're very much big fans. As if we turn a dollar into two, we can make a bunch of money. Right. But we're not just going to make a bunch of money on collecting that first dollar. Right. Which is typically what you're seeing in the space.
Sure. Well, before we go on, this episode of the Transformational Wealth Podcast is sponsored by Harvest Financial Advisors, a team of seasoned professionals committed to helping clients grow, protect, and enjoy their wealth. Whether you're building wealth, planning for retirement, or looking for a smart investment strategy, our team is here to guide you every step of the way. Visit harvestadvisors.com to learn more. And now let's get back into the conversation. You know, one of the things I think about from a reputable company standpoint, there's, you know, when the price of oil is up, I see new formations of companies, maybe an experienced oilman, oil person, whatever, who's been in the industry for a while, goes and starts their own drilling company, right? And maybe they're going to drill one or two or three wells and they're raising capital for that. You know, I see a lot of risk in that, even though there might be a lot of experience there. So I typically, you know, you want to look for companies that have been around for a long time, have that capital base as well. But also then, you know, understand the different risks. And we're not going to get into a lot of it today, but, you know, there's general partner, there's limited partner, there's limited liability corporation shares that you might typically put into an IRA or something like that. Each one of those classes takes on a different level of risk and may have a different potential benefit is there, that's there as well. As a general partner, you may take on more risk in the program. And one of those things that I think is really important for people to investors to look for might be, you know, what insurance protection is there also that might be brought to the table. So talk a little bit about how that protection is structured from an insurance standpoint, US Energy, but then maybe also, as you mentioned, some of those larger majors that are like Conoco and Occidental and Petroleum and so forth. How does that line up and provide protection to the investor?
Yeah, it's basically three rings or three different barriers to this, right? Because initially, right, and we do mass, this is why I pay companies like Chubb so much money every year. We do massive amounts, $50 to $100 million of insurance per fund, right? Multiple funds per year that we'll have in as kind of that first barrier, right? And secondarily, to your point, if we're out there with Exxon as the operator, but then you have other companies, the specialties like Halliburton, Schlumberger that are coming in for the hydraulic work. It's almost like a subcontract, right? The electrician that's part of it is carrying his own insurance, right? They're bonded. Same concept, right? Just bigger scale. And then finally, over and above all of this, U.S. Energy, we indemnify all investors with our with our whole balance sheet. And I don't mean through a shell company behind each fund, our whole C Corp, right? We're a several hundred million dollar company at this point. So we wouldn't put that much on the line if we were that concerned. Right. And so that's, but that's important because of what GP means, right? Google GP, it does mean that you have that risk set.
Right.
But there's risk to anything, right?
And, exactly.
And for us, you know, if we look at our space, right, we, in our five decades, we've, in our 40,000 investors or so, we have zero that have ever been exposed or breached as a GP. Right. And it's not because we're smarter on the geoscience. It's when you're doing proven development production, right? We're not doing offshore, where we're not doing step out or exploratory. You're just going into these known areas, right? And you're looking at thousands and thousands of well bores around your asset before you're completing that at the wellhead site. Right. So those from the type curves to the infrastructure, all this stuff is known. So really you're just kind of going doing the same thing over and over. So that's just not a risk that we've ever seen.
Well, and I appreciate you bringing that up because it's the fact is that you all, and I'm sure other companies, you realize what the risk is because it's zero. I mean, it's not zero. But then what are we going to put into place to mitigate that risk, right? And I think that's the most important thing. You have to understand the risk as a business and as an investor, and then also look at how is that being mitigated for me, right, for the company and also as an investor as well. I'll go back to that thing where I brought up, you know, an experienced oil person starting their own drilling company, you know, may carry a $5 million insurance policy. Okay, is that enough or not? You have to decide whether or not that's enough or not. I prefer the, when I hear numbers like 50 million or 100 million and assets backing a drilling program, that's something as an investor I would feel much more comfortable with if I was going to go down that path of that general partnership in a drilling fund as well. So I appreciate you walking through that.
Of course.
You mentioned opportunity zones and 1031s. I want to hit on a couple of those before if you have a little more time here, just tell me about opportunity zones. 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act comes along. This is not a political statement. It's just, I think it was bipartisan that this bill would get passed, brought a lot of benefit to underdeveloped or struggling areas within this country. A lot of times when people think about opportunity zones, they think real estate, but there's actually opportunities in the opportunity zones with oil and gas. Explain a little bit of that, if you don't
mind. I mean, so going back to the, we're due, FYI, in about a month, the street's expecting the new regulation to be released for OZs. Right. There's some talk of extension, some reintegration of past step up. So keep an eye out for that. Going back to the first version of this, when this first came out, for us, it was interesting because back in 2017, we were already 5-6 years into operating in the core of the Permian with the majors, right? So one day we're out there drilling wells for drilling funds. And then the next day there's something called op zones that are out there. And it's literally because the governors of each state, right? So Treasury came out with these because there was something like $7 trillion of unrealized cap gains, right? And they wanted to incentivize some of that, get off the bench, right? And develop areas that need the economic, they're X percent below GDP. Well, because the governor's got to pick the governor of Texas, right? Because if you go to these areas like Western Texas in the core of the Permian, there's nothing there. It's pump jacks, right? And some very, very small businesses. That's it. So the whole Permian's an op zone. So it was a very natural fit for us, and basically it's the same stuff, right? All of the benefits you get with a traditional real estate op zone, your tax deferral, your tax-free exit on the end and whatnot, it all applies here, but it's actually deeper than that, right? Because in the real estate side, in typical traditional real estate, you're buying an asset, a building, right? And then you've got to put money into it, right? You call doubling your basis, but there's some laws around what they've got to do. And then hopefully over time, the area develops, gentrifies, and you get a nice multiple on the exit down the road. And same concept, but we qualify in a different way. We're developing assets below, not above ground. And so the takeaway is this: investors were able to access immediate tax-free cash flow in our op zone structure, okay, instead of waiting 2-3x years for an unknown income at some point in the future. And so it does make a nice fit. It was, to be honest with you, if you look at the things that have given investors pause around op zones, a lot of those are naturally abated in the energy sector because of the way they wrote the tax law. It just happened to work that way. And so it's been a lot of fun for us because we can offer something unique in the space, or at least something to complement what investors are already doing in the traditional real estate OZ space.
And then, you know, the way that gets set up or gets structured is that, and you kind of mentioned this, there was so much in unrealized long-term or unrealized capital gains, let's say unrealized long-term capital gains that people had. And we all recognize if we can take capital and invest into areas, we can actually improve areas as well. So the government at that time, the administration wanted to see that come about. They passed this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And so as, you know, explain a little bit about this. So a client or someone that might have a long-term capital gain, let's say, they have, is it 180 days? They have 6 months to put it into an opportunity zone fund to get some a delay on paying those taxes, correct?
Yeah. In fact, a lot of times it's more than that. So it's any kind of gain, long-term, short-term, it doesn't matter. You've sold stock, a building, real estate, your business, whatever it is. But yeah, you have at least 180 days for some style of assets. But I just did a case, still ongoing, but in the last week, this individual had a gain in mid-January of 2024, right? So 16 months ago. And they thought, hey, look, I didn't do this by, you know, August, so my clock is up, right? It ticked to zero, we're done. No, because if you have a gain from a PTE, a pass-through entity, right? So for example, in the subchapter S, a multi-member LLC, it could be a number of structures. Your gain could actually be much longer. In this case, this individual has almost 18 months.
Oh, wow. Right?
So it will depend on the style of gain. But if you're not sure, you know, Mark's office can kind of help you unlock that a little bit. But just know that the optionality is not this strict, hard and fast 180. Many times it's much, much longer.
So it may not just be that 6 month rule. It may be like when you actually realize the gain starts the clock, and you may not know that until down the road or something like that. It pushes it out.
What happens is, so just as an example, right? So Mark, you were in and out of NVIDIA at the right time. You've got exactly 180 calendar days from the date of that exit, right? There's no question about that. That's clean. It's clear. However, right, if you had a gain that was, say, a multi-member LLC, right? Let's say I'll use the case that I just did with a group out of New York. They do a lot of spec houses in the Northeast in real estate, and they're a group of friends that invest together. So here, though, that individual can have a start date to that 180 that they choose. So it doesn't, you can actually use the date that your gain was recognized, the date you actually sold, right? So if it's an installment sale, the date of the last check, or you can use the end of that fiscal year, right? So you can look at the year that happened, look at 12/31, and then start the clock then. There's even a tertiary component here. You can use the date that your tax forms, in this case, which are K-1s, come out, which is March 15th. And now you're looking at September, right, of the following year, right? So just there's a lot to this, but know that you might have, especially for those that had a recent gain, say in the last year or so, know that if that's still on the table, they can still pull that maneuver off, amend their taxes, and get the taxes, the cap gains they've already paid, get them back.
So the 6-month rule is the minimum, and check with an advisor or something on if you can extend that as well, if you're looking to make one of those investments. That's probably the best takeaway from that as well. And let's look at one more area then. So I have unrealized capital gains, let's say in real estate, that I'm looking to get out of this piece of real estate. And I could do a special move called a 1031 back into real estate, but especially over the past couple of years with the run-up in interest rates and things like that, cap rates, you know, one measurement of your return from a piece of real estate has been coming down as well. But I'm thinking to myself, the only place I can go to do a 1031 exchange to preserve my tax, not to pay taxes, is into other real estate. While that's true, but there is actually a special way to invest into oil and gas that's still considered real estate as well. Correct.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, called mineral on the mineral side of things. So it's,
yeah, tell us a little about mineral rights then too. What that looks like.
It's real property, right? Just like the OZ stuff, you're getting the same benefits, the tax deferral, all of this, and they're direct title assets. Right. So actually, just like you own your house free and clear, you have that deed of title. It's the same thing here. So you've got some embedded flexibility on the whole time. Now, typically you want to be in these things 5 to 7 years to allow them to develop, sometimes a little longer, but in general, with a direct title asset, you have a lot of options day one, right? Because technically that means you could fire, in this case, US Energy, the sponsor behind the scenes. Right, because you directly own those assets. But yeah, minerals qualify for 1031s the same way traditional real estate does. Right. So
and then you could 1031 from mineral rights back into real estate later on if you wanted to as well.
Oh, sure. Just in the same way you do it in OZs. We see a lot right now. People coming out of real estate OZs that they've been in for the last couple of years, they're not happy with it. As long as they go back into another OZ, ours or someone else's, within 180 days. They're not exposed, but the same thing. The only difference, right, on the 1031 side, you've got those identification periods of 45 days, right, and you've got a QI involved. So OZs don't have that, but it's the same exact concept.
So coming back to as we're wrapping up here, coming back to the opportunity zones, because you alluded to this a little bit, that the opportunity zone fund had a limited time run, and actually that's just to the end of this year, in terms of. Typically, that's the way people look at it. A sunsetting comes back in, and in 2026, we have to look at paying taxes, things like that, which hopefully would be a lower tax amount for people. You know, in the general structure of that type of opportunity zone fund structure. But there is going on right now conversations between the current administration and Congress as well about extending some, most, or all of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That includes opportunity zones. I'm hearing from some of my people who know some people in Washington that, you know, it's pretty much a done deal that there are Democrats and Republicans that want to extend this as well. We're just unsure how it will impact opportunity zones at this point, but there will be some impact. Is that all what you're hearing as well?
Yeah, I'll add a little bit to that. So the latest I've heard is late May, so in about a month, is when we're expecting the street's expecting kind of news to drop, right? So what does that mean? Well, the expected changes, and I'll add one more piece to this. The expected changes are for 2026. So that's anyone that's in an op zone so far, right? Your gain has been removed from whatever investment you're in placed into 2026, right? So if you came in last year, you got a 2-year deferral. For our investors that came in, say, back in 2019, 2020, they've gotten a 5-6 year, 7-year deferral. So the other part of this, that's expected to go until 2028, right? So 26 becomes 28. Now, what we don't know, right, and I think we're starting to hear more and more rumors of how this is going to play out. What we don't know is who's grandfathered and where, right? So, for example, the guy that comes in tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. Odds are he'll get extended from 26 to 20. But the guy that was in it 5 years ago, he's probably stuck with 2026, right? There's going to be a bifurcation somewhere. And so that's part one. Part two is if we think back to this, you remember, Mark, when these 6-7 years ago, these things were 12-18 months out already. It took Treasury forever to get final rules and regs out. There was no clarity. Right. And so what was happening though, right? In 2019, you had a 5% basis step up, gone. 2021, 10% gone. So they're talking about reintegrating some of those. So I wouldn't be surprised if 26 becomes 28, at least for a large portion of investors. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a reintegration of the basis step ups, right? So the five and the 10. And I also wouldn't be surprised if the long tail of this right now, op zone tax law runs through 2046, right? 21 years from right now. I wouldn't be surprised if that it gets extended or not.
All right.
Right. So those are the things that they're actually eyeing right now. We probably won't hear all of this by the end of the month, but again, late May is the latest rumor that we've heard that we'll see a little bit of clarity.
So a lot going on there for, you know, new investors and even new investors, once this gets passed, could be under a different set of rules than, say, people that are already invested. They get grandfathered in and maybe they get a different adjustment and so forth. It's all kind of up in the air, but I think the general consensus is we'll see an extension of this, which is just going to be a benefit to those that have those capital gains that can continue to defer those and invest them into some opportunity zone areas for to build up those areas, and also for an investment to grow their wealth also. But both.
If you're sitting on a gain or you have a gain, at least look at it, whether or not ours or someone else's, whatever, but at least look at OZs. We've never in our entire history of tax reform, we've never seen this ability to access this unlimited tax-free bucket. It's a super
right.
Right. You hear people talk about like a mega Roth IRA. Why is that? Because regardless of how much money you have, right? And actually, these things are meant for the wealthy, which is kind of ironic, but you can put in limited dollars into that tax-free bucket, which has never happened before. So if you have the potential to use these things, at least consider it before they're not available.
If you have the potential and the time horizon as well, if you said, oh, I'm going to put this in, I need it back in a year and a half, probably not the thing for you. But to what you're alluding to is that after 10 years and in the general structure of that investment can be sold and then whatever gain is there is returned back to you tax-free. Is that correct?
Yeah whatever.
Phenomenal.
There's a handful of states that have decoupled. So just know that, right? So New York, California has two examples of bigger, bluer states that have decoupled from this. So you don't get the state benefit. But yeah, to your point, if your dollar turns into 2 or 4 or 10, it doesn't matter. It's all a tax-free exit because you hold an OZ 10 years in a day, your outside tax basis, which is IRS language for how we're going to tax you, and your fair market value. So usually the delta of those two things is your tax equation. Those things, things equate, right? So you have zero tax on the exit, which is that whole nature of the tax-free component.
Well, hey, we've talked about a lot. There's a lot, you know, I think the takeaway from this is that there's a lot of opportunities out there. You know, make sure as an investor that you do your homework or have someone kind of an advisor or something that understands this kind of walk alongside you as well to help kind of go through the mirror, because the tax benefits are there. Want to make sure you understand the risks and how risks are being mitigated. But there's so many ways to invest into oil and gas, depending on your situation. It could be one piece of your overall portfolio that could add value. And again, just a different risk and return metric than your other investments. And that's why I really wanted to get you on here today, Fred, and just kind of walk through that as well. So the last question, I always ask everybody this on the podcast. Again, the name of the podcast is Transformational Wealth. So when you hear that term transformational wealth, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's a fun one, right? Because when you look at, to me, it's a concept that just goes beyond the accumulation, right? Because if you think of, well, if you're on CNBC, you're just thinking, okay, what did your pile grow to, right? What did you add to that? But what it can do, though, is another conversation, right? Thinking beyond the monetary number, right? What kind of change can that bring, right? So to me, my life means something different now than it hopefully will in 5 or 10, but that might just mean more flexibility, more time, more freedom, right? Giving you the optionality around things and not making things for a financial decision, but because you want to do those things. But I think also this evolves as you age, right? Through different phases of life. So just think of the last couple of years from thematic and impact investing, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually down the road, it's legacy building, it's philanthropy. I think it takes many shapes, but I also think sometimes they're tied to the phase in life that you happen to be in at that point.
Yeah. I appreciate that. You know, the first thing you said up front was that, you know, it goes beyond just maybe the financial aspect of what the definition of wealth is, and what does that carry over into other areas of your life, which could be, and I've talked about this before as well, it could be relationships you have, or wisdom, or you said freedom of time, having freedom of money, freedom of purpose, having a purpose that you can give back as well. That's more transformed. That those are areas of wealth as well, that as your financial assets grow, maybe those areas of your life transform as well.
Yeah, it's the whys, right? The what is, okay, you're growing a portfolio, you're growing wealth, but what's the deeper meaning, the purpose? And these are all the whys behind the scenes. That's the fun part.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Fred Gratz, U.S. Energy Development Corporation, thanks so much for joining us today. Again, you can visit harvestadvisors.com to see the Harvest Financial Advisors website for more information about their services. And you can find more resources and more information on my websites, markhen.com and powerplaysofthewealthy.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope this has been very helpful and launches you into your next thing. And I look forward to hearing about your power plays that come about. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Transformational Wealth Podcast with Mark Henn. Mark is devoted to helping you understand how the wealthy invest and explaining how to leverage investment strategies to make the most of your financial situation. Are you ready to leverage the power plays and attain financial freedom? Visit markhenn.com to tap into the power plays of the wealthy to start building your financial future today.